Hello and welcome to Radio Prague. I'm Jan Wellinger. It's time now for this news update. Czech President Václav Klaus, on an official visit to Finland, has expressed a difference of opinion with his Finnish counterpart, Tarja Halonen, over the EU Constitution Treaty. In a joint news conference on Thursday, Mr. Klaus said he was happy, referring to the treaty's rejection in the Netherlands in Wednesday's referendum vote. Mr. Klaus called the referendum results a victory for freedom and democracy in Europe. The Finnish president disagreed, saying she regretted the results. Mr. Klaus is the only European head of state to express opposition to the EU Constitution Treaty. The Agricultural Ministry has revealed that in 2004 the Czech agriculture sector turned a profit of 9 billion crowns, or $365 million, a marked turnaround from the previous year when Czech agriculture suffered losses of 2 billion crowns. The ministry has attributed the turnaround in revenues to the Czech Republic's joining the European Union, seeing an increase in subsidies, improvements in production, and a rise in prices. The Czech Statistical Office has said that in 2003, the agriculture sector received 21 billion crowns in support, while last year that amount rose by a third. And the government's economic growth strategy paper, drafted by a team of experts led by the Deputy Prime Minister for the Economy, Martin Jahn, has suggested the Czech Republic could abolish its forced retirement age, allowing people to retire according to their own will and projected pensions. In 2015, there should be 7% fewer people in productive age than present. The Czech population is aging, and many analysts say the current system of funding pensions cannot be upheld. According to the strategy paper, early retirement conditions could be toughened. Half of all of those currently unemployed are aged between 55 and 64. The current system does not motivate them to look for jobs. Police have charged a tram driver with endangering the public in connection with an accident that claimed the lives of two pedestrians in March. The driver's streetcar jumped the rails at Prague's Charles Square, killing two and injuring three others who were unable to get out of the way in time. Police say the driver was driving too fast. If found guilty, he could face up to 10 years in prison. And finally, the Prague Castle Steps will see an exhibition race by world-class mountain bikers next week, including Olympic gold medal winner in Sydney 2000, Frenchman Miguel Martinez. 50 racers are expected to take part. The race, which features a circuit of 1,200 meters, includes a descent of 189 castle steps. I'm Jan Wellinger, and that's the news.
You're tuned to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, David Bourne. In today's programme, another blow to the European Constitution. What does the Dutch no mean for the Czech Republic? Prague has its first baby box to help prevent unwanted babies being abandoned in the street. And with summer upon us, we'll be relaxing in the sun at a famous Prague riverside oasis, now freshly renovated. Please stay with us. After the French no to the EU Constitution, Europe heard a resounding nay from the Netherlands on Wednesday. With Europe still reeling from the shock, Czech politicians, both champions and opponents of the Constitution, are sticking firmly to their views. And I'm joined now by Pavla Horáková here in the studio. Pavla, you've been following developments on the domestic political scene. What was the reaction of the Czech government?
Well, the Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek says the policy of the Czech cabinet remains the same. The government still wants to go ahead with the ratification process and seek a solution on a European level. The government has agreed that at the upcoming EU summit, it will seek an extension of the two-year ratification period in order to give countries that vote no more time to reconsider.
So the government still thinks there is hope for the constitution in its current form, then?
It indeed seems so, as it is now.
But is the government unanimous in its reaction to the latest developments? I mean, it's not long ago that the government, the three parties in the current government, were in deep crisis.
Well, the three-party government is strongly pro-EU and pro-constitution, but There was some discord, actually, within the coalition immediately after the French no. The Christian Democrats, the smaller party in the ruling coalition, announced independently of the other two coalition parties that the government should immediately suspend its information campaign on the European Constitution. And Prime Minister Paroubek dismissed their calls, arguing that the campaign has not even started, therefore there's nothing to suspend, which actually betrays the fact that the Czech Republic, as the last country in the EU, has neither set a date for the ratification, nor has it determined the manner in which the vote will take place, whether it will be a referendum or whether the Parliament will vote on it.
And that, of course, is at this stage whether it's going to happen at all. And now what about President Václav Klaus? He's often been labelled as a Eurosceptic, and he said that after the French referendum that it was time to kill off the treaty, that it belonged in history. So what does he say now?
Well, after the French referendum, President Klaus said that it clearly exposed the deep chasm which exists between the European political elites and the citizens of Europe. And he describes the Dutch rejection as no accident. So after the Dutch no, Mr. Klaus said that while the French referendum could have been interpreted as a one-off situation, no such thing can be said after the Dutch referendum. According to President Klaus, the people of Europe showed their strength, and he hoped that Czech officials will no longer pretend that nothing had happened.
And, of course, Mr. Klaus isn't on his own in opposing the constitution in the Czech Republic. Another vocal opponent of the constitution is his own party, the opposition Civic Democrats. And they, I gather, are also, well, pretty much delighted at the latest development.
Yes, indeed. The Civic Democrats actually share Mr. Klaus's views on the treaty. The deputy chairman, Petr Nečas, says it is a dead document. And another deputy head, Ivan Langer, says that the EU constitution is a dead end, or was rather a dead end street in the search for a best possible form of European integration. And the party's chairman, Mirek Topolánek, is against the extension of the deadline for ratification as proposed by the government and Prime Minister Paroubek, and he describes that extension as further alienation of the Eurocrats from European citizens.
Well, Pavla, thank you very much indeed for that analysis. You're tuned to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. International Children's Day, June the 1st, saw the opening of the first ever baby box in the Czech Republic, where mothers can give up unwanted babies anonymously. It was installed at a private clinic in Prague, an event that was preceded by heated debate about the moral aspects of this praxis. Daniela Lazarova was at the opening.
Já jenom chci upozornit, že tady je nastrčená osoba, která se pokusí vložit dítě do baby boxu.
What you hear there is a demonstration of how the thermoregulated baby box works. The mother punches a button at which the door swings open. She places her baby inside and clicks the door shut. An alarm instantly alerts a nurse and doctor who are there in less than a minute to take over the child. It all sounds very simple, but Roman Hanus of the Save Abandoned Babies Foundation says it was a long road and there were plenty of hurdles along the way.
This project we have on the table 2 years. We prepared that a lot of time, and we had a lot of problems with the legal system here, with state departments and other. A lot of negative voices that this is helping to the criminal activities. And we prepared a lot of opinions, legal opinions, about this question. And we have a strong legal opinion that this is not criminal activity and this is possible by Czech law. And just now we are very happy that we can open the first baby box in the Czech Republic here in Hloubětín in Gincentrum.
This practice, which exists in many European countries, has sparked a row between the health ministry and state-run hospitals, who wanted to introduce it on their premises. The health ministry has put its foot down and refuses to allow baby boxes in state-run institutions on the grounds that they would only lead to an increase in the number of abandoned children. Michaela Marksová-Tominová from the Ministry of Labour and Social Affairs has done a lot of lobbying in favour of baby boxes. She says there's a deep divide between the general public and a group of professionals who remain opposed to the idea.
Yes, I think that the public opinion is really on the side of the baby boxes. And I think that those, actually the position which is against them is actually a position of one group of professionals. They were saying that every child has a right to know his biological background. And second, the fear was that for many mothers, it could be a good opportunity to put the child away and not to take care of it. I think that it's unexplainable for normal people why these baby boxes shouldn't exist.
Baby box advocates claim that mothers who intend to abandon their children because they find themselves in a crisis will do so anyway. Specialists at the private mother and baby clinic in Prague say that even a single baby saved from dying out in the cold or being killed at birth would make the project worthwhile. Maria Voličková from the Save the Children Foundation is certain that the baby box will save many lives.
This could save dozens of children a year. I think that the idea that baby boxes will lead to an increase in the number of abandoned children is misleading. When a mother decides not to visit her doctor and give birth in secret, then she obviously has a big problem and is likely to act in desperation when the baby is born. Right now, 4 to 5 children a year are found abandoned, but I think that there are others killed and hidden or dumped on rubbish heaps who are never found. So even if we have a slight increase in the number of abandoned children, I think it would be children who would otherwise almost certainly have been killed and disposed of.
Maria Voličková ending Daniela's report on the Czech Republic's first ever baby box. And now we relax in the sun with Dita Asiedu.
Prague in the year 1910. Thousands of residents from the city and its surrounding areas flock to the popular recreation spot Žluté Lázně, or the Yellow Spa. The resort, which gained its name simply because it had a yellow fence, unlike the Blue Spa a few meters away, was a haven and hideaway from the bustling streets of the thriving city. But 40 years of communist rule and the devastating floods of 2002 left the 3.5 hectares of once green land stretching along the embankment of the river Vltava in very poor condition. On Wednesday, the newly reconstructed Yellow Spa finally reopened its doors to the public.
Chodím 42 roku na Žluté Lázně. Dneska je mi 81 roku.
I've been visiting the Yellow Spa for 42 years. I'm 81 now, but remember the days when I was still young. Before the communists came to power, this was one of our favorite places. There were lots of flowers and the service was top class. There was a first-class restaurant and the famous Blue Café, which served hot coffee and delicious cakes. We played table tennis, swam in the Vltava, and basked in the sun. It was a true spa. But when the communists took over, things went downhill, especially when they allowed a car repair shop to open next door. Cars and dirty spare parts lay everywhere. And then when the floods came in the summer of 2002, everything was destroyed.
Ale povodeň tady byla před 3 lety a ta moc nám poničila.
I'm sitting
sitting on one of the piers overlooking the Vltava River, with three beautiful white swans keeping me company. But there's also one very important man next to me, Libor Votruba of Tyco, the company which has been busy organizing Prague's numerous Easter and Christmas markets. But for the past 3 months, it's also invested into another project, the Yellow Spa.
We actually came here a couple of months ago to very kind of destroyed resort, mainly after flooding, and also nobody took care of the area. And we actually built up beach volleyball courts, four of them, a football court on the beach, actually on the sand, petanque courses, then there's going to be ping pong. We have some little boats, and we actually prepared also big area for children and with families with children. That's our kind of priority, to bring here families and their kids. There's a restaurant, like garden restaurant, with 2,500 seats. We have good beer for sure. And then we prepared also like dancing spot, where we want to have dancing nights and more like traditional things which disappeared from Czech culture in last years.
I believe that one building that has survived since 1910 is the Blue Café.
Well, that's the Blue Café. It survived. Actually, only the construction, the metal construction, survived. The rest we actually rebuilt, and now we made a bar out of it.
A teď žluté lázně bent.
The spa also has its own band, the Žluté Lázně band, which will be holding regular concerts at the resort. There'll also be swing, salsa, jazz and other themed nights throughout the summer months. Plans are underway to build a 30-meter pool to make up for the not-so-attractive muddy water in the River Vltava. In case you are in Prague or are planning a visit sometime soon, a day ticket costs 50 crowns, which is a little over $2, and a one-year pass, 1,200 crowns. So, see you there.
Well, I wish I were there. Many thanks to Dita Asiedu for that report. This weekend is the 61st anniversary of D-Day, and in Panorama Now we join Brian Kennedy as he looks back to the Czech role in the Normandy landings.
Czechoslovak participation in the first weeks of Operation Overlord, the invasion of Normandy that began on D-Day, June 6, 1944, was almost exclusively limited to the air, as soldiers from occupied Czechoslovakia's 1st Armored Brigade only deployed to France weeks after the Allied landings, but hundreds more Czech fighting men took part doing battle under the flags of other Allied nations.
Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force, you are about to embark upon the great crusade toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you.
June 5th, 1944. Supreme Allied Commander General Dwight D. Eisenhower prepares the order for D-Day, the start of Operation Overlord, a codename for the invasion of Normandy.
Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened. He will fight savagely.
It was to be the greatest combined land, sea, and air operation in military history.
Communique number one. Under the command of General Eisenhower, Allied naval forces, supported by strong air forces, began landing Allied armies this morning on the northern coast of France.
Within hours, planes began taking off from airfields in southern England and from the decks of Allied warships steaming across the English Channel towards Nazi-occupied France. Some 15 minutes after midnight on the 6th of June, 1944, the first of 23,000 U.S., British, and Canadian paratroopers and glider troops plunged into the darkness over Normandy. The longest day was underway.
At last it started, the enormous bombing and shelling of the coast defenses. We came in from the sea that morning with a terrific volume of firepower. The hundreds of aircraft were dropping thousands of tons of bombs. The cruisers and destroyers were going close in to pound the shore batteries on casemates. and in a few minutes we could hardly see the beaches for smoke.
Our air support has been fine, and the loudspeakers call out almost constantly Spitfires on the fort or Mustangs overhead.
In all, 3 million men, 13,000 aircraft, 1,200 warships, 2,700 merchant ships, and 2,500 landing craft took part in the Allied invasion of Normandy. At daybreak, the main bombardment ended.
And then, at last, H hour. And at H hour, there was a sudden and almost frightening silence. The fire program ceased. It was the moment for the assault troops to go ashore.
Some 150,000 armed men from the United States, Britain, and Canada, supported by tens of thousands of Polish, French, Czechoslovak, and other Allied troops, stormed ashore at 5 landing sites on the French beaches, codenamed Sword, Juno, Gold, Omaha, and Utah. Ladislav Jindra left occupied Czechoslovakia for America in 1938. After the United States entered the war, he joined the U.S. Army's 29th Infantry Division, which trained for the D-Day assault in England. There, Private Jindra learned how to capture a beach and advance from crater to crater. Landing at Omaha, his division suffered heavy casualties.
The Germans shot at us. There were mines, artillery, and heavy-mounted machine guns. The guy next to you would be running, and then, in an instant, be killed or wounded. There was thick smoke everywhere. D-Day was something that no one can really describe.
Just in the hedges around me, I can see many men taking shelter behind the banks wearing their steel helmets while this terrific barrage goes on around us. The shells are whistling overhead now. Just listen to them.
Also among the tens of thousands of Czechoslovaks who served in the 1st Armored Brigade or under a foreign flag was Otto Horovich, who joined up with the British after several harrowing years on the run.
I fled in 1940 because I wanted to fight for our country. I crossed into Hungary, made my way to Yugoslavia, and from there to Italy. I was captured and imprisoned in a concentration camp in Italy for 3 years, then escaped. I went to Sicily, and from there to Algeria, and finally to England. In 1944, I fought in Normandy and at Dunkirk. That's all.
It was British and American skill and firepower, and above all, the heroism of the assault troops that scaled the wall. And as for the shore batteries, they must have been put out of action by the bombers.
All day, Allied heavy bombers have been operating in support of the ground troops.
The three independent Czechoslovak fighter squadrons, the 310th, 12th, and 13th, operating Spitfires and under British command, flew numerous sorties on D-Day. Otto Schmick, a Slovak ace with the 310th, shot down his lucky 13th plane above Normandy, while the 311th, a bomber squadron, patrolled the English Channel.
Bernard Peters, flight sergeant, 311th squadron. I was in air, flying in a Liberator near Brest, looking out for submarines.
On D-Day, the 311th was patrolling the skies in B-24 Liberators, looking for the Kriegsmarine, the Nazi submarine fleet, in an operation codenamed Cork.
It's hard to say now what you felt. Fear, excitement, you just don't think of it, you know. You just take it as it comes.
They sank one sub and effectively sealed off the western part of the English Channel.
As well as those four Czechoslovak squadrons, there were quite a lot of Czechs and Slovaks who served in all the British squadrons.
Roger Darlington, who wrote a biography of the Czech ace Karel Kutilvaše, notes that the Czechoslovak fighter wing provided crucial cover in direct support of the British Second Army's landings on and around the beaches of Normandy.
Most of the action on D-Day was on the beaches, but of course they needed air cover, and a great many units, including Czechoslovak pilots, provided that cover. And in fact, fairly rapidly, the Allies did assume mastery of the air, which enabled the soldiers to penetrate into France and get the invasion underway.
Altogether, over 2,000 Czechoslovak airmen served in the RAF, the British Royal Air Force. Of the 482 Czechoslovak airmen killed in battle, The 311th Bomber Squadron suffered the greatest number of casualties, 273. Unable to sustain further losses, the British reassigned the squadron to Coastal Command.
My name is Warlick, Charles Warlick. I was with 311th Squadron, Coastal Command.
Na Minoshvi Nehlente was their motto, disregard their numbers. And Czech airmen of the 311th told Radio Prague last year, ahead of the 60th anniversary of D-Day, that they simply didn't think about the odds and how they were stacked against them.
D-Day, I don't think there was nervousness. I think it was more an elated feeling that something was happening finally. And I think we took it in our stride, let's put it that way. Took it all in our stride.
Operation Overlord achieved its objective to open a crucial second front to engage the Nazis on continental Europe. But despite the success of the Normandy invasion, it would take almost a full year to bring the German war machine to its knees.
People of Western Europe, a landing was made this morning on the coast of France by troops of the Allied Expeditionary Force. This landing is part of the concerted United Nations plan for the liberation of Europe, made in conjunction with our great Russian allies. I have this message for all of you. Although the initial assault may not have been made in your own country, the hour of your liberation is approaching.
And Brian Kennedy's Panorama brings today's programme to an end. Please tune in again soon and keep writing to us at Radio Prague, 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic. From me, David Vaughan, and all of us here, goodbye.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, Ondes Courtes. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Six heures, 6h27. Europe, 5930, 7345. 7h30, 7h57, Europe, 9880, 11600. 16h30, 16h57, Europe, Afrique Centre, 5930, 17485. 18h30, 18h57, Europe, Afrique Ouest, 5930, 13580. 22h, 22h27, Amérique du Nord, 9415, 7345. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz/français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz/français.